You probably know the hits. Hits.
Those guys?
You probably know the hits.
Hey guys, this is You Probably Know the Hits. I'm Jason. That's Jeremy.
Hello.
We have a special sort of unplanned episode today. We're going to talk about the Grateful Dead for the third and goddamn, like hopefully last time, Jeremy. Can we get over this or?
Let me tell you something.
Okay.
I am so not over it. I cannot even tell you how not over it I am.
So we are embarking on a 7-part series of talking about a show Jeremy saw of Dead & Co., the modern Grateful Dead, at the Sphere. And believe it or not, the podcast series is going to take longer than the 19-hour show he saw that night.
Yeah, that may be the case.
Okay.
And that's the thing about the Grateful Dead. There is so much to listen to, but there's so much to talk about.
Is there?
And, Oh, okay. There's a lot to talk about. And I don't want to make this episode really... I really thought we were going to talk more about the Sphere. And,
I do acknowledge that there might be some snoozer parts. You know, some people do use podcasts to go to sleep. I do. And I'm not going to name names of some of the people because they're great podcasts. It's just they have soothing voices, you know, just like you and me, the just sort of that Barry White feel, you know.
Voices.
You know, I feel like talking about the Grateful Dead part of it, you know, the actual band, you know, Melatonin's got nothing on that, right?
Well, I will say, I mean, this was the famous Woodstock story where CCR was, like, John Fogerty hated the Grateful Dead for years because he said the Grateful Dead put everyone to sleep right before CCR went on stage.
Man, can you imagine what an abrupt awakening that must have been for everybody in the crowd when CCR goes on after the being in the stupor?
John Fogerty's like screeching voice.
Down on the bayou!
Like, whoa, man.
But yeah, I think there is certainly a big component of this that's about the Sphere, or as they want you to call it, Sphere. They don't want you to add value to
okay,
it.
Okay,
they want
okay.
you to be as pretentious as possible.
Okay, and okay. Just so for context, dear listeners, it is when we're recording this. This is June of 2024. We are hot, like within a week or something. Mm-hmm. On the tail of when Jeremy went to the Sphere for the first time, of many, I'm sure, to see Dead & Co. They're doing a little residency this summer. I think it opened this year, right? U2 was in the spring or in the winter?
U2 was in the I think, like, November.
Okay.
Yeah, November or so is when it started.
Right. Okay, so the Sphere in Las Vegas has been open for, like, a little bit less than a year. Jeremy did invite me to this, and I considered going until I saw that it was in the middle of June in Las Vegas in the desert, and I correctly predicted probably about 110 degrees during the day there.
And this is interesting because I'll say this, and I told you this at the time, like, you would have loved the show. Even if you don't know a lot of Grateful Dead music, you would have been blown away by the sound, by the visuals. We'll talk about all that. But even with a covered walkway from the Venetian where I was staying, you still had to walk a good, we were outside a total of probably about half an hour, between the time it took us to walk and then wait for the doors to open. We got there about 10 minutes before the doors opened.
Not air conditioned, waiting for the doors. Nice.
Nope, we're waiting outside. Now we're in the shade, but it doesn't matter.
Yeah, the shade in 110 isn't, that big a deal. Now listen.
Yeah.
I understand it is a dry heat. It is. I'm sure it was fundamentally more comfortable.
The next person who tells me that.
I understand from my time in Arizona that it's definitely fundamentally more comfortable than that god awful 110 when you and I were doing Metallica in Texas with the fucking humidity. Jesus Christ, right? But
yeah, it was different. I agree. And this was easier than that.
Right,
you would have
right,
handled this
sure.
much better than that, for sure. We
sure.
walked quite a bit further because I had an awesome parking spot.
Right, but it's still good. I didn't come because I would have been crying the whole time.
You would have hated it.
Which is not, like, abnormal for me to complain, but I mean, when you throw the heat in there, it just gets more whiny, you know.
Really? Yeah, so, it is true. I've experienced it.
So, for our listeners who are not concert geeks like us, tell me about the Sphere. What is the Sphere? Who gives a shit?
Yeah, this is interesting because I think you and I have been like tracking the progress of the Sphere.
Every band like clips of what they're doing for the visuals and stuff. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I think even before it opened, I think for a couple of years before it opened, like we were aware that they were building this concert venue that was basically, I think the way we understood it, it was supposed to be kind of like the perfect concert venue.
Right.
For sound, for visuals, for views. It is supposed to be the ultimate concert experience with a screen that is, it's not 360 degrees because half the place is seats.
Right, but it's like 180 degrees. Like it's half of a sphere. And in particular, the sphere is like sort of like, what is that place in Dallas? It was called the Omni, right? It's like literally what it's called?
The Omni Theater in Fort Worth was a complete bubble. It was like a miniature sphere.
Yeah, exactly. And it was like a little bubble that they could play, some movies on a screen that was kind of like IMAX a little bit, you know.
They would play like science movies and stuff on it.
Right.
But it was an interesting sensation because I remember you'd be in your seats and that thing would start up and the screen is all around you.
Right.
And it's so big and the sound is very powerful and you felt like you were moving. Like you felt like the seats were moving.
Yeah.
Along with the screen.
And so
the sphere has the same feel.
Yeah, I was going to say, in that situation, we're talking about a little building that's like, I don't know, two or three stories high,
and it might seat like 200 people.
Right. So the sphere, give me a sense. Is this a city block? How big is this thing?
It is pretty shockingly big once you get in there, and even when you see the outside of it, it is pretty jarring. The first time you're driving down the highway and you just see this giant bubble, this giant ball, and just of all this stuff.
Is it hyper bright on the outside, or that's just kind of how the cameras make it look when people?
No, it's bright. It's amazingly bright and amazingly clear. To the point where even on a sunny day, you can see the graphics. They're not as fun, but you can still certainly see them.
The building itself is a sphere, a big ball. It on the outside of it famously has every part of it that you can see is itself like a big LCD screen that they play video on. You know, they, I think they've had ones that are like joking around with the airplanes that are taking over going over the sphere and it points to them, or, you know, all kinds of fun, advertisements and whatnot that are going on. Definitely seems like it's probably an eyesore for somebody who has an apartment that was aiming that way.
It's in Las Vegas. It's in the middle of the brightest lights in the world.
Okay, so is it on the strip proper or just like close to it?
I mean, it's right off the strip. It's visible from the strip,
right.
And if you stay on the strip, you can walk there.
Okay.
I mean, it's in the middle of everything.
Okay. So it's not like out in the middle of, nowhere, like seven blocks from the strip or anything.
No, it's connected to the Venetian and the Palazzo right on the strip. It's just right in the middle of it all. So it fits in.
Okay.
I mean, it really fits in nicely with the decor of Las Vegas. It looks like it fits.
It gives me the vibe when I see it of like kind of how, is it Luxor, the one that's the pyramid?
Yeah.
Where it's kind of like, I imagine when that one came out in the 80s or the 90s or whatnot, it was like, this is the future. This is incredible. How strange, you know?
Yeah.
That's the vibe I get from this thing versus, I don't know, like the Bellagio and a number of those have opened in, since in the last couple decades. Really nice, but just kind of the same Caesar's Palace over and over again, or like I think the Venetian maybe not as super old either, super kind of upscale classy feel, but not interesting, I would say. Right.
I would say that, Vegas had this like kind of new casino boom in the 90s,
right,
where you had all those like New York,
the sort of
Luxor,
Disneyland boom,
Excalibur.
Right.
Yeah, it was meant to attract kids and families.
Right.
And I think you're seeing them go back on that a little bit now, or no, they're trying to attract rich white guys.
Right.
Is what they're trying to attract.
And
the sphere is perfect.
They're doing a good job here.
Yes, they're doing a great job. And you look at who's played there so far. are U2, who are their fans?
Right, exactly.
Rich white guys.
Yeah.
And then it was Fish. Who are their fans? Rich white guys.
Right.
Rich white guys
in Birkenstocks. But yes, rich white guys all the same.
Yes. And then Dead & Co.
Right.
Yeah. Not a lot of like inner city Dead & Co fans.
Right, right.
And then the next band is the Eagles. And I think I told you maybe is the way to put it.
We got to make our investment back. And I think that didn't we figure out that it's or hear that it was like $1 billion
to build it?
Yeah, to build it. It was more than a usual stadium, or something.
It ran way over, and it ran like it was in financial trouble as soon as it opened.
Right.
I think it's going to make it because it's so unique,
uh-huh.
and bands are just banging down the door trying to get in to play it.
So
and.
That's one of the things, you know, one of the things we've talked about on our podcast over the years, and now it's just like passe and cliche, is the fabled, you know, screen that's the size of the stadium, you know, the wall behind the band, right?
Yeah.
What is the deal? How are people... are there 12 artists out there who are making Sphere-specific 180-degree video that's so high resolution that it can be used for a Dead & Co, right? Or a U2,
right.
or a, you know what I mean? Is it, I obviously you've been watching a little bit more of the videos than me. I just can't imagine the visuals. I can't imagine somebody making visuals for that particular venue. And then obviously it's not reusable anywhere else, right?
Yeah, so that's the thing. So I read a little bit about how Dead & Co. put it together, which will be helpful, I think, for this conversation, which is basically they played their last show of the last tour last August, and John Mayer said that they were approached or started talking about the Sphere that fall.
Okay.
So they've been talking about it since like probably last September, October, something like that.
Sure.
He said around November, December, beginning of the year, it started to get really serious. And the way he put it was like, I was really, really hoping we would get picked, which again, makes it definitely sound like there are lots of bands calling up the Sphere saying, when can we get in? How can we get in?
Okay.
There?
So the Sphere's calling the shots, obviously.
So the Sphere's calling the shots and it's owned by Madison Square Garden.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Yeah. It's same company. So Mayer said when they got picked, he spent, like, they put him in charge. The rest of the band let him kind of take over as far as the visuals and getting all that together.
Okay.
So there is a Sphere studio in Burbank, California that is a, like, a third or quarter size replica of the Sphere.
Okay.
Which I didn't know until I read this article, like, yesterday.
Right.
So he said he went out there and started spending, like, every day at Sphere Studios putting the show together. And so you can get in this thing because you can't do it at the Sphere because during the day at the actual Sphere, they have like a movie that plays, like a nature movie that you can just buy tickets and go watch.
It's not so, just the concerts.
Right. They're showing like fun stuff during the day that you can see. So, you know, that's not available during the day to put together a show together. So there is a production person. And then they start piecing together, like, what footage is already out there that is usable?
Right.
What do we need to go film? What kind of imagery are we looking for?
Right.
And so basically, it sounds like a lot of it is, there are a lot of, there's a lot of kind of, quote, B-roll footage out there.
Yeah, right.
That you can acquire rights to. But then they also have a graphic designer.
Obviously there was, you sent me some videos of some very Grateful Dead visuals of, you know, the Grateful Dead bear dancing on this sort of trippy, you know, tunnel of, psychedelic looking stuff.
Right.
And that presumably, nobody's out there making stock footage of that's made for the show, but
so they have a graphic designer who's putting those things together too, and he basically said it was 4 months of just trying to put the visuals together to make it work. And then he said, like, the weeks leading up to the show, I guess after the U2 resident or after the Fish residency ended, he said he was at the Sphere, the actual Sphere in Vegas, every night from like 11 p.m. to 4 in the morning, getting it all tested out, because you can't have it before then because they're doing this public movie thing that they do.
All right.
So he said he couldn't get in there until 11 o'clock at night. And so, like, up until the day before the show, he said, I was in there, like, in the middle of the night trying to get it all right.
Oh, my God.
And
all the cues and all that kind of shit and running through it again. And man.
And that's what's so hard about the Dead is that they don't really do cues. They don't, you know, they jam. And
yeah, and I was wondering, like, their visuals probably are a little bit more free form, right? It's not Tool playing to a click track to sync up with the visuals. So
what they've done so far is, like, they've used, they have a set of, let's say, like, 50 different visuals. And they reuse them regularly.
Sure.
And they'll use them for different songs. The visual that I saw for Fire on the Mountain was the same visual they used for Terrapin Station a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, okay, so, okay, okay.
So, but then there
and
are
I mean,
some
like,
that are...
Fundamentally, the song has XYZ BPM, right? A certain speed. And
yeah.
I'm sure the visuals can be sped up or slowed down to match that speed, and then you're good to go, right?
And there are some cues. There are a couple
of
things.
Okay, so there's some that, like, actually... With the instrumentation, as the song crescendos, there's a few that, like, really do sync up good.
So, for instance, like, the first song they played is done without any real graphics. Uh-huh. It just kind of projects, you know, the band up on the screen, so there's nothing really happening. And then that song ends, and then they kind of have to jam for a minute, because then that the sphere, it looks like it's opening up. And it looks like it's like the whole, it's like a big gate is opening and you're stepping into a San Francisco neighborhood. And so while that is opening, and like they're kind of jamming, waiting for that to open. And then as soon as it opens, they kick into the next song.
Okay.
And the whole theme of this thing, and they don't ever say this is the theme, but this is what I saw.
Right.
Is that during that second song, the camera rises and you literally go from San Francisco to space. Like by the end of that visual, you are all the way into space looking at the pale blue dot of Earth.
And is it and a, is it a one shot, single shot pull the whole time?
Yes. Yes.
Oh man. That's
I have
nuts.
no idea how they did that.
And it doesn't look like CG. It looks like it seems like single camera the whole.
It's the most incredible thing. You think you are on a spaceship.
Dude.
Like it is the most incredible, disorienting thing I've ever seen in my life.
Man.
And before I get into the rest of it, I'll say this. One of my first fears, because I'd watched a lot of videos.
Okay.
And I kept thinking, how is this not just going to feel like I'm watching a video with some nice music as a soundtrack?
Right.
Like, that's what it looks
like.
Well,
and
like,
I was wondering, did it sound okay? Or is it just visuals?
It sounded amazing.
Best venue ever for sound for you?
The sound is perfect.
Really?
They've got it exactly right.
Oh, and man, that's
there's
crazy.
Like, there's no echo.
What?
The sound
and
is coming.
Let's be clear. This place is like about the big This place is about as big as like a baseball stadium or.
Yes. It's a giant metal ball.
Right.
Sound should bounce around in there like crazy.
Right, right.
And it doesn't. The way they have some ridiculous number of speakers behind the screen.
Oh, okay.
So it's a totally clean setup. There's no equipment out there. There's no big speakers being hung like you see in arenas.
Oh,
there's none of that. The sound is all coming from behind the screen.
Okay. And is it projection, you think? Like that the sphere visuals are actually projection on a, you know, for lack of better, like, it can't be, right? But
is it a
projection?
It's tons. If you walk right up to it, you'll see it is tons of little tiny LED lights.
Oh my goodness.
And it's so incredibly clear. There's a video that Allie took.
Like literally billions, probably.
Yeah. There's a video that Allie took
of
that, like, you're on the ocean, like you're on the water, and you can see some land off in the distance.
Uh-huh.
And she doesn't capture any of the crowd or the stage. And it literally just looks like she's standing on a boat looking at the water. Like that's what it looks like. It's so unbelievably clear and so realistic.
Okay.
And so you're watching all that happen and you're going off into space. Man, it does not take away from the music at all. It completely enhances it.
Really?
It makes it so much better. You're so much more into it. There are no distractions. The crowd is as rowdy as I've ever heard a crowd.
At a Grateful Dead concert, which is dead silent. You could have heard a pin drop, right?
A Grateful Dead crowd is usually relatively lively. They like to dance. They like to sing.
Really?
No, it's a rowdy crowd, and they were very rowdy this night.
Interesting.
In fact, we saw six people throughout the night, five or six, being pulled off the floor by medics.
A little bit too much of the hallucinogenics, maybe.
I think all that heat and the easy access to alcohol that you have in Las Vegas
probably was not a
good combination.
Yeah.
So they go into the second song, and it's this thing where you're going off into space. And then what's happening is throughout the rest of the show, every visual, like, it's basically like you're in space.
Right.
And it's all very surreal.
Is it continuous for like a large block of the set?
It's not.
Oh, okay.
But the idea is you
thematically.
Know, all the... Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. None of the visuals are happening on Earth. It's happening in kind of an altered reality. Happening in space.
That fits.
And then at the very end of the show, the second to last song, you're coming back down to Earth.
Okay.
And you land right back in that San Francisco neighborhood, which was the neighborhood where the Grateful Dead started, the Haight-Ashbury district. It's so cool. It almost brings a tear to the eye the way it ends and the way they
There's
got to
be an article about that at some point, how they got that shot. That's so specialized. That's cool.
I'll send you an article that I saw John Mayer give about the visuals.
Uh-huh.
You'll find it really interesting.
Okay, yeah, we'll link that in the podcast notes too.
Yeah, it is really incredible the way... The way that the visuals really, really fully enhance the show, because it makes it to where, like, man, I know I've heard people complain that they heard like people talking. We didn't get any of that where we were. Like, man, everyone was so focused on the show and so into it.
Right.
And I think it really has that effect. It really keeps you focused on the show.
Well, yeah, I can imagine some U2 fans not being necessarily respectful, right? I think it probably depends on the band who's playing.
For sure.
And the fan club that's there.
And it helps, too, that the Dead, you know, they play a different show every night. Everyone is like hanging on the beginning of every song, waiting to hear what they're going to play next.
Right.
And
right.
So, yeah, it leads to a more focused crowd, I think, in general.
Yeah. So, you guys were on the floor, right?
Yeah.
So you could walk right up to the band. Was it super packed? Because some of the videos you sent, you know, it looks like people are like have enough room to dance. I mean, obviously, fire code is different than like, you know, Soldier Field for Pink Floyd's Animal Tour, you know.
Yeah.
So pretty comfy or like pretty like, you know, shoulder to shoulder for the most part or?
No, I'd say it was pretty tight.
Okay.
There was a little bubble right around us
uh-huh.
because we were in the pathway right on the way to like the big middle exit to go to the bathroom and stuff.
Oh, okay.
So our area was kind of kept relatively clear, but you did have people walking by.
Okay.
There is room off to either side of the stage that's not nearly as crowded where the spinners go, the girls who, you know, spin in their dresses throughout the show.
Right.
That's where, you know, that people can dance over there and they have room to do that. We liked where we were because we were kind of looking straight at the stage and we were leaning up against the rail in the back.
Nice.
So it's a lot more
back support,
you know?
Man.
Like, I sat down at one point,
right?
Because I was able to lean up against that.
Those VIP passes, right, where it's mm-hmm. like you can meet and greet the band. Does the Dead & Co. have, like, a pass you can buy where they provide the walker for you, or is that you have to bring your own?
You have to bring your own walker.
Okay.
But they do have – so we didn't do that. We didn't do, like, the VIP. You know, you can pay a little extra for, like, early admission.
Right.
Which is – helpful when you know, when you're trying to get on the floor.
Sure.
We decided we didn't want to get right up on the stage.
Yeah, right. You want to see the screen, right?
We didn't do the early admission, but what we did do you know, was got right at the back where we'd have a perfect view of the stage. When we got in, if we wanted to get right up on the stage, we could have.
Okay.
Like, I walked up there and took pictures.
Yeah.
So that's only an hour and a half before the show starts. And we didn't, like, get in line early or anything. Like, we got to the line at, like, 5:30.
Right.
And the doors opened at 5:45.
Okay.
And I could have gotten easily right on the rail.
Okay.
Without any trouble. So, but by the time the show started, it definitely filled in. One thing I expected to see during this show was, like, I thought you'd see a lot of non-Dead fans just coming to see the Sphere.
Yeah.
And because it's Vegas.
Right.
And I didn't really see any of that. It was a pretty hardcore, dedicated crowd, which did surprise me a little bit. I didn't think it'd be quite like that. But again, this is what they want, right? They want the mildly wealthy, affluent white guy.
I know you guys were on the floor, but like even up in the quote unquote rafters, I mean, tickets were $200 or $300 starting, right? Or
yeah, ours were $375.
Whoa, on the floor?
Each? Yeah.
Was that like fan club special deal? How did you? I was expecting it was to be $500-$600 starting for the floor, but
no, $375. And I looked because I really want to go back, and I could get floor tickets for like $280 something for a show in August.
Interesting.
But with that said, I had heard some rumblings that these shows didn't sell as well as maybe they thought they would.
Right, because of this, probably the summer. Well, and the pulling power of, any band pretty much compared to like U2, right?
I think
Rolling Stones or something.
I think what happened was they started to, when they first went on sale, they were these like VIP packages that were insanely expensive.
Uh-huh.
And so then everyone started bitching about ticket prices and they just stopped trying to buy tickets.
Right, because everybody thinks they're this expensive.
Right, yeah. And then the regular tickets just went on sale and it was kind of a thing for some people.
There's kind
of
this implosion that's happening right now, right? Where like last couple of years it's been $180 starting to go to like a generic concert at a stadium.
Yeah.
What is it? I guess who was it? The Black Keys is one of the ones that just got eaten by it, where people are just like, no, I'm not paying that level. And like, man, I mean, the Pearl Jam tickets I got this summer, right? Or for the summer, through the fan club were $150 starting. And then when the actual tickets went on sale, $600 for a bunch of them.
Jeez. The Black Keys and
out of control. And then of course, now a bonus of that is now the shows are happening. And some of them in Europe, for people who did pay $600, some of them are going for $80 that like never sold. You know, like,
see, that's like Jennifer Lopez just canceled a tour.
Okay.
For the same reason.
Yeah.
I mean, it just wasn't selling. And, you know, now on Ticketmaster, you can see the map. So everyone can see how badly a show is selling.
Oh yeah, definitely.
And I think that actually, like, that becomes self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yeah.
People see that it's not selling and now it's not exciting. I don't want to go anymore.
Right.
And then you end up getting your tour canceled. This place was packed.
Yeah.
I think all that talk was bullshit because they ended up adding more dates.
Right.
In August. Anyway, this place was packed. I didn't see empty seats.
Right.
The floor was very, very full. At the Palazzo, at the Venetian, at Treasure Island, at the Mirage, everywhere you go in that town, you saw those tie-dyed Grateful Dead shirts.
Right, of course.
All over town, no matter where you went, they were there. They took over
the summer in Vegas.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was unusual.
Because this residency is going like nonstop for a number of weeks or?
Yeah, they have 2 weeks at the end of July that they're taking off, and then they have they've added a couple of more in August, and then that'll be it. They've said there will be no more shows this year.
Okay. Last farewell tour of 2024.
So they see they get a pass on that because
the Sphere is something special.
Well, it's their last tour. They did say it was their last tour, but as soon as that tour ended, John Mayer put out a statement on Instagram basically saying, like, it was the last tour, but it's not the last show. We just don't know what the next show is going to be.
Festival and kind of stuff.
It'll be festivals. I bet it'll be residencies.
Right.
They'll do this. They'll probably do Madison Square Garden. I'm hearing a lot of rumors about Madison Square Garden around like Halloween.
Okay.
And so I bet they'll do things like that. But the, you know, 20 city summer tour.
Yeah.
I don't think they can do it anymore.
Right.
So Yeah, it was more unusual to get on the elevator at the hotel with someone who was not here for the shows.
Right.
Which is really cool because it just means everyone's there for the same thing. You know, you're at the hotel. You're
with our people everywhere.
You're getting a pizza the next day, and you're the guy behind you. You're like, man, what about the show last night, huh? Like everyone is there
right.
for the shows, and everyone has the shirts, and so they're easily identifiable.
Right,
and it makes for a really cool experience when a fan base just takes over a city. Now, if it's the wrong fan base, it can be a really bad experience.
Yeah, the winter of U2, dark times.
Oh, God forbid the Foo Fighters ever get it.
Oh, man.
You know, that God, would be rough.
Nightmare. Let's get into it. You got a couple songs into the set. Did it feel disorienting? One of the things I remember about that, what's it called, Omnisphere or whatever, we were in Dallas when we were kids, was just feeling seasick, like, immediately, because it's, like, such an overwhelming sort of screen.
Yeah, and that first time when you start to kind of lift off, you're going to space, and it's going very slow. It's not fast.
Right.
But it felt like the entire floor was moving. It felt like the stage was levitating. And it was very disorienting. I had to actually look down for a minute. I got used to it pretty quickly.
Right.
But I absolutely had to look down for a minute.
Interesting.
That was
probably a artifact of the specific visual that was going on. Was kind of, like you said, sort of zooming out.
Yeah. For sure. And I don't know... you know, if they wouldn't, they started with a disorienting visual. And so if they would have started with something else.
Right.
And kind of work our way into that, I might have gotten used to it before then.
Okay.
As it went, it wasn't a big deal. It turned out fine, and I was fine with the rest of it. But it is very, there's one point where you're on, there's like this kind of colorful, like rainbow colored ribbon that's like going through space, and you feel like you're driving on this. It feels like Mario Kart almost.
Okay.
It feels like you're going. It feels like you're on that thing and you're moving with it.
Right.
And it's, I don't know if disorienting is the right word, but it is definitely a sensation. And then what happens is on the floor, you don't feel this, but those are, they call them haptic seats. Like they vibrate move with they vibrate and stuff with the visuals.
Oh, interesting.
So the Grateful Dead do this thing called drum space, right?
Okay.
And the drums is like a, just kind of a, not a drum solo, but more of a percussion, showcase. And then space has always been just kind of ambient noise with psychedelic imagery.
Okay.
Space, everyone's been real excited about this because this the guy.
Space is a particular song?
But it's different every night. It is like a trippy ambient noise solo put on by the drummer, Mickey Hart.
Okay.
So he's using all kinds of instrumentation.
Get Your Beer.
That's what a lot of people use it as. Yeah, a lot of people hate it. But when they announced the Sphere, everyone was like, dude, space was made for the Sphere.
Okay.
This is going to be incredible because he's real. Mickey's very scientific minded. He does a lot of, I think he's done a lot of work with like the vibrations of sound.
Okay.
And the physicality of it and the physics of it, how it works.
Interesting.
And so space was curated, the visuals were curated by him personally.
Interesting.
He did it, and it's different every night. Supposedly, he's doing something to control the visuals as he's going.
Okay, yeah.
I don't know how that works. There's an article about it.
You can send MIDI triggers, right? You hit this drum, it sends an electrical signal. Something like a microphone kind of picks it up and sends like a wireless signal or whatever to something else that controls the lights or controls the visual changing to the next cue.
But the sound was so the not the decibel level, but the tone,
the fidelity.
It was so deep.
Yeah,
it was such a low register. Like you feel it deep in your chest. You're talking. and it sounds like the it sounds like you're talking through a fan like that.
Yeah.
It, just because it's in that sound is in your chest so deep.
Man.
And I mean, everyone is looking at each other like, what the fuck? Like, and the visuals that are happening are just the trippiest thing you've ever seen in your life. And it was amazing. But what they can do with sound in this place is incredible. Like, that's not, you don't get that at a stadium. Like, that is using the space as an instrument.
Right.
And I think that's what they're very badly trying to do. Bob Weir has said they want to come back and do it again, because what they're working on that they can't do yet is they can't truly sync up the visuals with the music. In other words, they can't truly do what you said, which is have the music kick off cues.
Yeah.
Automatic. Like, they haven't worked that out yet.
Interesting.
And so, but they think they're close. And so they want to come back where they can do it even better.
Right.
And really have, because right now, all that's really happening is there's a video playing behind the guys.
Okay.
And so what they want to do is make it to where, no, the music is truly controlling the visuals.
Right.
And they think, it sounds like they think they're not far from being able to do that.
But do they do that in their regular shows? Because I thought the Grateful Dead is kind of improvisation a lot, right? You have like sort of at one end of the spectrum, you have Tool, right? Which is like, no doubt, complete click track in their ears to sync up to those visuals. Which are epic visuals and, you know, a big part of those particular concerts experience. Right. But it's not, nothing goes off cue until they're like, yeah, we have, you know, this, you know, visual is just going to go on repeat for a while, right?
Well, the thing about the Dead is that they have always been known to have a very elaborate stage setup.
Right. Okay.
You wouldn't really think it, but they've always been. One of the reasons is because they were one of the first bands to really tour stadiums. And so they had to come up with a light and sound setup that could fill a stadium.
Right.
And so as a result, they kind of became leaders in that area. They were one of the first to really do it.
So when you saw them a year or two or three back, they did have things like this with, you know, the wall video kind of thing that does sync to the music to some degree.
During Space, yes.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. And then, like, that was a show where they did the show after mine in Boulder last year, is where they did the drone show at the end of the show, where drones came up and did the Grateful Dead logo. And did like one of those dancing bears.
Right.
So yeah, they've always been, think they've always tried to be kind of at the, you know, at the edge.
It sounds like this is pretty forefront stuff then, if they can't, they can't even, you know, that part is still pending, so to speak.
Yeah. It's really, I don't know, you know, if they hadn't have done the Sphere, I don't know if like they'd be doing anything right now at all, or if they would all be, you know, kind of done with, they're done touring. So why not?
Yeah.
I think as soon as, it sounds like from what they have all said, as soon as they knew the Sphere was a possibility,
right,
like they absolutely wanted in.
Yeah.
And John Mayer very badly wanted to do it, but he wanted to put it together because in his words, like he literally wanted it to be the greatest experience you've ever had.
Right.
And I think everyone has basically said this is much better than what U2 did.
Right.
Fish, I think everyone liked a lot. Fish did really well. But Fish only had four shows.
Okay.
So Fish could concentrate their efforts on putting together four completely unique shows.
Oh, interesting.
There were
different set lists every night.
Set lists, all different visuals. They didn't reuse any visuals. They didn't.
Whereas, like you said, John Mayer for this one has gotten like 50 visuals in the bag.
Yes.
And, you know, every night set is 20 songs or 30 songs or something. And
yes.
Okay.
And like U2, every night was basically just doing the same show.
Yeah, exactly. They were playing Acting Baby, I think, right? Like front to top to back.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So, you know, this was, I really liked the way they did it. Surprise, surprise.
Now, are we experiencing the last show Jeremy saw as the best show ever?
No.
Phenomenon?
No. That is a phenomenon, I admit.
Uh-huh.
Not proud of it. Uh-huh. In this case, no, it is so overwhelming.
Really?
When you're in there. And as soon as the show starts, you know immediately, like, this is the most incredible thing I've ever seen.
Man. Okay, okay. Let me put it to you another way. So incredible that you're going to go see the Eagles there? Man, what a criticism of the Eagles. God damn.
Abso-fucking-lutely not. What a waste. What a waste of that amazing, incredible venue.
Yeah.
To have the goddamn Eagles.
Man. Just like I told you, dude, I'm going to go there for $10 in, you know, the spring, the like perfect weather of 2026 and see, you know, like we said, Foo Fighters or something for like, they'll actually throw in a free soda, you know. Right now it is premium, you know. It's interesting to note they actually do have like little things that you can go to during the day. I thought it was literally just for these concerts, and I was like, man, that's a proposition to, because I think that the U2 tickets, there were a bunch that were like $1,000 tickets, and I don't think that was even second market.
And I think that was partially because it was the Sphere, it was the first shows, so everyone's got to go see it, and U2 is kind of a vanilla, you know, who doesn't at least kind of like U2,
right? Exactly. It wasn't Taylor Swift because she had just done her multi-billion dollar tour the year before, right? But same thing, same poll, right?
So I think that when you do it the way the Dead do it, and I think this is what you'll see bands do. So the Dead have what's called the Dead Forever Experience. Okay. And it's essentially like, it's like a small museum. It's at the Venetian. It's free to get in.
Is this a permanent thing?
No. It's only during the residency.
Okay.
And so, I mean, it's just a history of the Grateful Dead. There's a big collection of photographs taken by the band, taken by their family. You know, a lot of Mickey Hart's artwork was there. There was a replica of
made the famous bears and stuff?
Yeah. I don't know if he created the bear, but okay. Mickey Hart's the drummer. And a lot of his art, is incorporated in the show.
Okay.
And then you had a replica of the Wall of Sound, you know, that giant sound system
'70s. I think you had video, or if not, I definitely saw video this weekend on Instagram of, like, they have part of the set, they have the, like, a fake Wall of Sound behind them on the screen, right?
Yes. That was probably one of the ones I sent you.
Yeah.
There was a replica, like, a working replica Wall of Sound.
Oh, and, like, actually, you could see the speakers moving?
Yeah. It's real small. It's, like, 15 feet high. But it was like, they're real speakers, like a real true replica Wall of Sound, and they're actually giving it away. And I'm like, man, if I win that thing, I'm going to have a lot of explaining to do at home as I put it in the living room, because where else is it going to go?
Right. Yeah. I'm surprised you didn't say the bedroom, but okay.
It's going to sound awesome. I know that for sure.
Yeah. So you gotta be able to charge for people to come see it. So now you just got yourself a house big enough to store it. So that's gonna be good.
So the Dead Forever thing was really cool. You could spend a couple hours in there just checking it all out.
So it's not just like a little baby hallway, usual kind of, you know, temporary exhibit, right?
No, it was legit. It was good. Nice. It wasn't as big as I thought it was going to be, but it was cool.
Yeah, that's cool.
They had, and then there's, you know, Grateful Dead shows always have Shakedown Street, which is where all of the kind of unofficial vendors sell their illegal Grateful Dead stuff.
The open air drug market, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, Shakedown Street was a little bit more regulated this time because it was Las Vegas. Because it was so hot, they moved it inside, and so it was at the Tuscany Hotel. I did not go over there.
Okay.
But you know, they still did it. So, you know, you have all of these, you know, vendors coming to town selling their shit.
Right.
I mean, it was just, again, the whole town was the Dead, and you see why it's so worth it to probably give these bands a big cut.
Sounds like a pretty cool experience. I was texting you earlier this week. I asked if it was top 10, top 5, and you said you're having a hard time thinking of shows that were better.
It's tough. There is something really enjoyable about just being out on the lawn at an amphitheater in the, you know, evening, and the weather's great, and you got great music.
You got Paul McCartney up there, and you're like, doesn't compare.
There's something I really do love about that. And I've heard people say, like, man, the Sphere is going to ruin concerts for you forever. Like, you know, you'll never be able to enjoy another one. I don't think that's going to be the case.
Right.
Still love shows.
Yeah.
But listen, if
it does that well, we're going to get many versions of this in every city. So which is not a complaint, you know.
I can't believe they're not already planned.
Right.
I mean, this is the future of concerts.
Yeah.
And it's absolutely a, it's a, de- you know, it's not a concert in the traditional sense. I mean, it's a band playing, and it feels like that. That's good.
But it's a show.
I mean, I hurt my neck hurt by the end of the night from looking up the whole night. Okay, it really did.
So when you're on the floor, the top of the screen, is it behind you? Is it directly up? Is it?
Yeah, if you're on the floor, you're looking directly straight up into the sky to see the top of the screen.
Damn. Okay. So, if you could do it again, do you think that there were some seats that were better than the floor, or?
I prefer to be on the floor for two reasons. One, okay. I just prefer to stand, and no one bothers you for standing if you're on the floor.
Okay, sure.
And two, I like to be able to move around. And so if I don't like where I'm standing, I can go to the other side and stand over there.
Yeah, that's true. And somebody's so annoying, you just go somewhere else.
Exactly. So yeah. I prefer the freedom of the floor. Generally, however, the first few rows of the 100 or the 200 section would probably be ideal.
Okay.
The 100 section does have some obstructed views because you can be below 200.
Oh, okay.
And so you can't see all the way up.
Interesting.
Which seems like a design flaw.
Yeah, for $1 billion.
The old
we can fit three more seats in Southwest mantra. Yeah. Southwest Airlines mantra strikes again. Right. You know.
So you know there was that, but I think I would. I don't know that there is a truly bad seat in the place. I think right up by the band would be the worst because you're literally going to have to look behind you to see the visuals.
Yeah.
And so
you were saying you guys were pretty much towards the back of the GA area, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And that made it comfortable-ish. Like you said, your neck was actually hurting. But I mean, this was like a 3-hour show, 2.5?
3.5.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. My neck hurt, but I would do it. If I had to do it again, I would still do the floor.
Yeah.
I still prefer that. I just like the freedom of it. But if you like to sit, man, the 200 or especially the 300 level.
Yeah.
I've seen videos from the 300 level that look perfect.
Yeah. It's similar to like a movie theater, it sounds like, right? If you're in the first couple rows, it's, you know, it's a bit of moving your head and swiveling around to see everything.
Yeah.
Right. And then you get further back, it's a little bit better. And there's definitely a sweet spot, right? Okay.
Yeah. So
that's cool. I'm hyped about the sound thing. I didn't know that the sound was incredible. And, you know, I mean, coming from the Portland market where a lot of the shows here hit the stadium that's made for basketball and nothing that sounds good.
And this is like, I'm not going to try to explain it because I don't understand it. I don't even know what it's called, but it is like, it is very like state of the art sound. It's not just that they have like a lot of speakers. Like they have figured out a technology.
Like you said, no echo sounds like a scientific feat.
Yeah. I don't know how they do that, but it's not an echoey sound at all.
Right.
The best thing I can say about the sound is that you don't notice it.
Yeah. That's crazy.
Which is
whereas like, at the Metallica, I was like, wow, I'm literally hearing James's vocals when they come back rather than when they first happen. You know, based on where we were sitting. So yeah. That's cool.
Yeah, it's really, and I'll say this too, everything about that place is pretty convenient, like pretty easy to get up and get a drink, pretty easy to go to the bathroom. Like lots of choices. Like there's good food.
Really?
Like it is a very pleasant venue to go to.
Huh.
The only downside is there is just that walk. And then after the show, they do kind of herd everyone out towards the strip. And it is kind of a pain in the ass to get back to wherever you are.
Right. How many does it seat?
About 20,000.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah.
I was thinking it was, you know, like much larger stadium, you know, 60. Okay.
No, it's about 20,000. So like for the Dead, people pointed out like it's about the same number of tickets they sold last summer on their tour.
Yeah.
Except they're not having to travel. And they're not having to pay a crew to tear down and set up.
Yeah, they're literally getting to like be in Sin City all night. Or, you know.
They're all staying in suites at the Venetian.
I think
they're only playing Thursday, Friday, Saturday. They're all flying home Saturday night.
Man.
Every interview I've seen with these guys, it's been like speaking from his home back in Los Angeles.
Yeah, right. That's like a puddle jump flight too.
On the jet. I mean, you just made $10 million this weekend. You can
charter the jet. Yeah,
yeah. Mayer has said they want to do more. It wouldn't surprise me if Mayer got some shows at the Sphere. And that's the big discussion that, that everyone was having, especially with our friends down there, is who do you want there? Who's next?
Right.
And you mentioned Tool.
And yeah. I'd see that. That'd be pretty cool.
That would be awesome. I don't even know a lot of Tool, but I know they would make excellent use of
The only thing is, like we were talking about earlier, the fans would make it pretty miserable. But again, I like your GA theory of the, like, being able to maybe find a pocket of, you know, people who are not complete assholes where you can move around freely.
I bet you're going to see another, it's going to be just these big legacy acts.
Definitely.
It wouldn't shock me if Elton John did it.
Right.
It wouldn't shock me if you saw, like, a newer band like Tool. The problem is, are their fans old enough to be rich enough?
Right. Absolutely. Fucking Tool's been pulling in $500 starting tickets for the three shows a year for, man, probably a decade now. It has been ridiculous long before this shit where the floor for a big kind of band was $150 for a ticket.
See, that's I would love to see, like, I didn't know Tool was, I have no idea how popular Tool is.
Sure.
I'd love to see
I can get it, though, especially if they're like one of those bands that really is playing three or four shows a year and that's about it. Like, the visuals and stuff they put on. I mean, like we were talking about the Black Keys and the, who was it, Jennifer Lopez? Like, there's a part there where, like, if the tickets don't sell enough, the investment and the outlay for the personnel and, I mean, the gas for the 25 semis to go from city to city is cutting into the amount of, like, profitability or even being, you know, able to be financially possible, right?
Oh, yeah.
So I can see why, to some degree, because the Tool shows does sound like sort of, when you described, like, the Elton John show you saw a few years back.
Yeah,
that to me sounds very similar to this, or to what the Tool ones are. Just the level of production is absurd for just a dumb '90s rock and roll band. You know,
what really kills me about the Eagles, why I'm so bitter and angry about this, is that they are not a band who has ever used any kind of real visual media.
Oh, really?
Like, they've never done, like, a big stage show.
They've always been pretty half-assed.
I mean, they've played stadiums. They've always had big shows, but they've never used the stage as an instrument.
Interesting. You know, that brings me back to what I was asking in the beginning, is, like, there are some people out there who, like, I mean, there are, you know, famous choreographers and whatnot that's like, you know, Taylor Swift just used so-and-so to put her show together, right?
Yeah.
And yeah, they must just be, like, you know, getting sloppy seconds from whoever John Mayer just now did, you know, worked with.
And
I'm sure it's going to be great, but still.
And this is the thing, too. Like, I don't know how Phish made money during these shows, only doing four of them. Because you think of how much time goes into creating these visuals, how much money that costs.
Right.
Especially if it's not stock footage, which most of it probably isn't.
Right.
And so you have to go get those shots. And then you have to rehearse more than you usually do because you have to get used to the visuals and the sound. That's one thing Bob Weir has said. The sound comes right back to the stage and it's a little bit disorienting. And so they've had to start all wearing inner earpieces, which they usually don't do.
Interesting. Yeah, so, like, they used to be live. They used to hear it and play along with their amps and whatnot. And now it's out of sync, so to speak.
They have that inner earpiece for their monitor, basically, because the sound, the way it comes back to them, is not perfect.
Man, certain level of production, it all comes back to click tracks, man.
But I bet it costs a fortune to put a show on there.
Yeah.
And I bet it takes a few shows at least to make that money back.
Yeah. So the technical feed of all the moving pieces makes it, like, required. I think that, you know, I've talked to you before about how some enterprising U2 bootleggers have been able to, like, tap the radio frequency before they used to be encrypted of, here's, you know, what the Edge hears in his ears, right? Here's what Bono is hearing. You know, he has, who knows, maybe he's got the bass and the drums turned up pretty high, but the Edge turned down because he needs to sing, you know, in with the rhythm section, you know. And there was a video I saw recently, I think it was Taylor Swift, or maybe it was Billie Eilish, and it was like, they have these audio cues that are like, it's kind of the click track of the song, but then it'll have, like, you know, let's say the click track is kind of like, dut, dut, dut. Dut. And then right before an important thing's happening, it'll be like dut 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 dut, and it's so that the performer as well as the band and everybody else can know, like, here is the precise 1, 2, 3, you know, we're going to switch or whatnot. It's a when I saw that video, and it's the same kind of thing. Somebody's bootlegging the inner earpiece of what the band is hearing. Yeah. I don't know. I had appreciation and also, like, I guess sympathy for the performers. You know, it's truly performance. It's not jamming, you know.
And for the Dead, there's definitely jamming, but I think with the visuals, I think they do have something telling them, like, you've got 25 more seconds of this visual.
Right.
And so you've got to stretch it out.
Right. Oh, interesting. Yeah, get over to the bridge or whatever.
So there's no real rehearsal for that, but Fish said they did the same thing. Like, they rehearsed having to stretch things out. Just to make sure if they had to go a little further than they usually do, they were ready.
Oh, interesting.
And,
okay.
And so I think the Dead may have done something similar where,
man,
they
it's
kinda,
like
they
the news guy, the local news. He's just got somebody in his ear telling him, okay, we're about to, man.
But they, you know, but the music, I was worried about that too, because, you know, the Dead like to jam.
Right.
And so I was worried that it would take away from the spontaneity of the music, having to stay with visuals.
Right.
And it didn't at all. One reason it didn't is because, again, their set lists are different, so it always keeps you kind of on your toes.
Sure.
You know, anyway. But I didn't, like, no, they jammed out as much as they always do.
Yeah, they stick, you know, section A of the animation on loop. You know?
Yeah. And they're still jamming. They know how long they have to jam.
Right.
And so there were definitely times where I was like, they know what song is next, but they have not yet worked out how they're going to get there.
Yeah.
And because they're just kind of jamming, and you can see they're not quite going in any direction yet.
Right.
And then eventually they work their way into that song. And so, but it didn't take away from that. I was real worried that it would.
Yeah.
I do think most bands who use this place are not going to be like the Dead. They're going to be like the Eagles, who are going to have a tight, you know, 2-hour show.
Right, identical
with the same
set
song,
every night.
Same visuals every single night on perfect cue.
Yeah.
There's a lot of click tracks going on in their ear.
Right.
And, you know, it's going to be note for note like it sounds on the album.
Yeah.
And that's what their fans
are
going to fucking love.
Just put the hologram up there and call it a day.
Yeah,
you know?
Their fans are going to eat it up.
Yeah.
Their fans are going to absolutely love every second of it.
Right.
And they're going to go home thinking they saw the best show they've ever seen in their lives.
Yeah. So, it all goes back to my 12-year-old brother seeing Blink-182 at the Starplex with me. And I'm like 15, 16. And I'm like, that was the worst show of my life. You know, and my little brother had never been to a concert before. And he was like, to this day, best concert of his whole life. He's been to a lot of them, you know. And that's how the Eagles and the Foo Fighters keep going. There's a sucker born every minute, and they are a fan of Dave Grohl.
Oh my god!
You did see the Foo Fighters recently for the kids and whatnot. So it seems like you're more resigned to the truth. Actually experienced it.
Also recently learned that in the beginning stages of the Foo Fighters, later than that, like around 2000, the Foo Fighters and Grohl were AIDS deniers.
What? Okay, you heard it here first, kids. This is how we're going to become famous. Well, I got to Google that. That's amazing.
This is how we're ending this episode. So back in 2000... the bass player, who is still the bass player for the Foo Fighters, organized a benefit for this organization. I forgot the organization is called, but their whole thing is trying to spread awareness that HIV does not cause AIDS. And that it was unnecessary to get tested because HIV wasn't that dangerous.
Okay. I was going to say, this is getting more fringe by the second. But at first I was like, yeah, I thought it was possible to have HIV and not turn into full-blown AIDS. But then it starts getting into Holocaust denial.
Yes.
Two sentences later. And you're like, okay.
So they had a link to this organization on their website for like 3 years.
God.
And I don't know that Grohl ever, you know, had any statement on it, but it's his fucking band. And it was on his fucking website.
Yeah, that's pretty weird, man. That's like Rage Against the Machine's bassist is like pretty right wing of all things. And it's like one of those things where the guys in the band are obviously very left wing and anti-capitalist and all this while making their riches and whatnot. And it's just like one of those things where like one of the guys is just outspoken and, you know, diametrically totally different. Politically.
Jeez. It's like, how do they, how does,
How does Tom Morello sleep at night on his bed filled with cash? I don't know.
I'm going to need to learn more about this right wing Rage Against the Machine
bassist.
Yeah,
no, it sounds like he said some pretty problematic things. Which, like, I mean, is that on brand for Rage Against the Machine? I think so. Like, they depending on your political leaning, they've said problematic things for sure. I wouldn't predict seeing this guy say some of the things, and I can't remember off the top of my head, but it was like pretty staunchly, you know, right wing kind of, like, I don't know if it's super pro gun or what, but some of those good old standards. Him and Clapton would have a great time together.
Well, we heard it here first.
Dave Grohl doesn't believe in AIDS, and that's right. We'll see you guys again next time
for the Foo Fighters Part 6.
All right. See you guys.